Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Teignmouth Area Talking Newspaper. Today is Friday the 1st of March, and I'm Jean Cole, and we are the Yellow Team. And after a very windy and wet night, the sun is actually shining. Let's hope it lasts. I'm joined by two readers from our team for this week's programme, so let's meet them.
Hello, I'm Maggie West.
Hello. I'm Lynn Yates.
Here are this week's headline stories. Cash-strapped centre to close. Towns mark anniversary of war in Ukraine. And lava over loo refurbishment. Right, here we go for our first story, which is from Lynn.
Cash-strapped centre looks set to close. A well-loved community centre is due to close in Teignmouth after running out of cash. The Kingsway Meadow Centre was in desperate need of funding and trustees running the operation, which has been provided help and support to residents for decades, took the difficult decision to close. The poor state of the building, which belongs to Teignbridge Council and is leased to the centre, along with increasing difficulties sourcing grant funding, led to the closure this week. Two members of staff are employed at the centre, which has been providing a youth club, bingo sessions, exercise classes, a play group, a social hub for parents and carers, as well as space for meetings, social events, and a base for the much-needed food larder. But it's become a struggle to source funding and grants, and with no surplus cash, it was not considered financially viable to continue. Sabrina Merrilies, who used the centre as a child and now with her own children, said it was absolutely devastating. She said, "We as a community are desperate. We have always been tight-knit, and the Meadow Centre and its managers have provided a lifeline to lots of people. Without the centre," she says, "there will be nowhere for the youth club, playgroups and the elderly to go, or for a food bank." She fears when closed, the site will be sold off for housing, leaving families with nowhere to go. She said, "This is a centre that caters for all generations and has been around for a long time." Built in the 1960s by the community on land given by the then Teignbridge Urban District Council, the building is now in need of modernisation and repair, which could cost about £20,000. It is understood to need rewiring, and there have been squirrels in the roof. Councillor David Cox said, "It is sad as centre staff and volunteers do an amazing job. It is very much needed by the community. It has been a big success. Local residents are understandably upset." Sarah Holmes, centre manager, had set up a fundraising page to try to keep the centre afloat. In a week, she had raised more than £1,000 of her £10,000 target. She said, "Over the years, the centre has been used by thousands of people and is still well used today. However, we are completely funded by grants from larger funding organisations, and this last year, it has become very difficult to find the money for the basic running of the building, including rent, electric, gas and insurance." She had appealed for help to meet these running costs, estimated to be £10,000 a year, not including salaries. The trustees were approached for a comment, and there is a photograph here of the Kingsway Centre with the arched entrance to where the building is situated.
2 years on, towns mark the anniversary of the war in Ukraine. Dawlish and Newton Abbott mark the second anniversary of the war in Ukraine with special events in the town. In Dawlish, the Ukrainian flag was raised at the piazza to commemorate 2 years since hostilities began. Many Ukrainians have settled in Dawlish since the rehoming programme started. Mayor of Dawlish, Rosie Dawson, was accompanied by her escort, Ina Yevko, who came to live in Dawlish from Ukraine. Readings and prayers were said in English and Ukrainian at the ceremony. Councillor Dawson told the gathering, We gather to mark 2 years since the war began in your beautiful country. We raise the flag for those who have suffered, those who have fought and are fighting, those who are frightened, and all Ukrainian people who showed such bravery. We also raise the flag for hope, and hope that a time of peace and safety will come. In Newton Abbot, the gathering took place at St. Leonard's Clock Tower, where Mayor David Corney Walker led a minute's silence, followed by the raising of the Ukrainian flag. And the Reverend David Brown also led a prayer to commemorate those whose lives have been lost or affected by the war. The Ukrainian community in Newton Abbot gathered at the Courtney Centre afterwards to reflect, and the Rotary Club of Newton Abbot supported the event, which was organised by the Newton Abbot Town Council. Collections of supplies to be sent to the frontline soldiers included items such as hand warmers and medical supplies. There's a drop-off point at the Courtney Centre, and a list of supplies needed is available by contacting admin@newtonabbotcic.org.uk. And there are two photographs, one of the Mayor of Dawlish standing at the piazza with the Ukrainian and the British flags, and one at Newton Abbot, also standing and having a minute's silence.
Lather over loo refurbishment. Ladies' loos on the lawn in Dawlish are now closed for 2 months for work to provide an accessible area. The female toilets are shut until April the 26th, while work is underway, leaving the only other public toilets for women to use further up the town at Barton Hill. Teignbridge Council announced the closure of the toilets, which it said was for internal work to provide a changing places accessible unit. The council then had to explain that the new facility will allow for adult changing after questions were raised by residents. A spokesman said, "Please note, this is a changing places facility which is accessible and allows for adult changing. Once the work is complete, this unit will be accessible to all from outside the building." There are already baby changing facilities at these toilets separate to the unit, which are not affected. But the timing of the work has caused complaints, as the toilets will be closed over the Easter holidays. The nearest ladies' toilet that will be available is at Barton Hill, next to the car park, which is at the other end of town. Former Town and District Councillor Ros Prowse questioned why the work was being carried out at a time when the tourist season is beginning. She said, "This shows a complete lack of common sense. You need toilets over a holiday period, especially at the start of the season when businesses need to get off to a good start." There were also comments over the length of time the work is expected to take, and the distance to the nearest toilets, with some suggesting it would put off day trippers. But some welcomed the changing places facility. One said, "Thank you for putting a changing places in. I care for a young adult in a wheelchair, and we're very restricted on where to go with her. Having a place to hoist onto a table is music to my ears." Another commented that it was great news, as changing places are needed desperately and so few around, it will make such a difference. Changing places offer an accessible toilets for adults, and many need changing or support, such as a hoist.
Supporters of Tynmouth Hospital say they are euphoric after Teignbridge councillors voted in favour of another bid to keep the historic NHS building open. Their sustained campaign received a much-needed boost as Teignbridge councillors agreed to push ahead with a referral to the Secretary of State to reconsider the closure. A notice of motion put forward by Teignbridge Council Chairman Councillor Chris Claraine, a vocal supporter of the hospital, received almost unanimous backing from members of the full council. The vote gives hope to the Save Our Hospital campaign following Devon County Council's refusal to go back to the government for another look at the decision to shut the hospital, the first purpose-built NHS hospital in the country. Council leader Martin Wrigley said, "We voted to refer the decision back to the Secretary of State. There is a lot of work to do to get the evidence together, and we have to add to the work which was already done by Devon County Council. But we will make sure we will put the referral in as soon as we can." Councillor Claraine's motion followed changes in the rules, allowing other bodies to make such referrals.
Work starts on new flood-reducing culvert for Kenton. Work on a new larger culvert in Kenton, which once completed would help reduce the risk of flooding in the area, has begun this week. The work will last for approximately 5 weeks, and during this time the road will be closed with signed diversions in place. The existing stone culvert has reached the end of its life and it's starting to collapse. Its deterioration accelerated following last September's heavy rain and flooding. This new culvert is larger and the frontage will be made from stone recycled from the old culvert, reinforced with steel. This will ensure that the appearance of the new culvert will be in keeping with the current structure. The existing stone arch culvert will be removed and it will be rebuilt with a wider and higher slab design, which will significantly increase its capacity. The work will be carried out by Marine and Civil Solutions. Councillor Stuart Hughes, Devon County Council's Cabinet Member for Highway Management, said, "Given local concerns about the extent of the flooding last autumn, we wanted to reduce the risk of a repeat in the future. This work effectively future-proofs the culvert. It will be significantly larger in size and will allow more water to flow through." Councillor Anna Connett, the local member for Exminster and Halden, said, "We have secured the services of an extremely competent contractor who has the ability to deliver this work at short notice for us. I am personally extremely happy that everything seems to be coming together on this project, and we will not only be able to undertake the repairs swiftly, but also remove ongoing concerns around the structures contributing to flooding."
Is it the final curtain for festival? A long-running festival in Dawlish is facing extinction unless more volunteers can be found. Dawlish Arts Festival has been in existence for more than 100 years and is the oldest such event of its kind in the South West. At its height, the festival ran for more than a week each year and included a variety of arts, including theatre, music and dance. The festival began informally more than 100 years ago, but it was in the 1950s that Jim Holman developed the concept to deliver a variety of musical performances to give local people the chance to experience styles of music they wouldn't normally be able to access. Over the last 20 years, the festival developed further to become a registered charity and encompassing all forms of the arts, and to be educational. This has seen events including jazz and pop music to classical, dance displays and lessons, comedy, magic and theatre, and included workshops and displays of local crafts, poetry, art and photography. Spokesman Joanne Bickle said, "We've used the event to promote local groups and to celebrate their successes. Our research has shown that people planned holidays to Dawlish to coincide with the festival. But time has marched on, and COVID happened, and it's been difficult to recruit new volunteers or trustees. So we are left pondering the future and asking the difficult question whether we fight to retain the oldest arts festival in the Southwest, or is it time to pull down the final curtain?"
Blaze damage at Exminster property. Fire has damaged both a building and vehicles in Exminster. The blaze broke out yesterday afternoon at the property in Days Pottles Lane. A caravan was destroyed by the fire and a car was severely damaged by heat and smoke. Fire crews were alerted to the scene just after 4 p.m. Residents reported seeing smoke from some distance away. Four fire crews attended the incident where the building was described as being well alight. A spokesman for Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service said, "The building was well alight on our arrival, and the fire involved a caravan, car, and a large outbuilding. Crews tackled the blaze with water and foam jets to extinguish the fire. The building was used for storage and was 50% damaged by fire. A caravan was destroyed by fire, and a car was severely damaged by heat and smoke. The fire service have said the cause of the blaze was accidental, and there is a photograph here of billowing smoke and the beautiful fields of Exminster."
Engineers are making further checks on Shoreditch Bridge over the next few weeks. An inspection of the Victorian Bridge was held in 2022 by Highways Authority Devon County Council, which identified a number of defects. As a result, urgent underwater scour repair work was carried out to four of the concrete columns which support the bridge. Work to do this was finished a year ago, and a one-year inspection is now due. Further investigation was considered necessary to determine the significance of defects to the superstructure, which is all the elements of the bridge elements above the concrete columns. The outcome of these investigations will determine what remedial works are now needed. Devon County Council is currently undertaking further investigations and will shortly start an underwater dive inspection. While on site, engineers will also take the opportunity to remove loose concrete to the underside of the main beams for safety. The work started on February the 12th and is expected to last between 4 and 5 weeks. Most of the work will take place underneath the bridge. But two-way traffic lights will need to be in place along a short section for 2 days from March the 1st and March the 2nd during the work to test the bridge's waterproofing. And there's a lovely photograph of Shoreditch Bridge looking absolutely beautiful in the sunshine, and the river is gleaming beautifully.
And now some planning news. From beer to nuptials, that's the aim of new plans in Bishop Stainton. The building, which housed Red Rock Microbrewery, could be used for events from weddings to wakes if Teignbridge Council planners agree. A planning application for a change of use has been submitted for the site at Humber Barn. In a statement, the applicants say the barn building previously used for brewing beer would be ideal to be used in conjunction with the existing Humber Barn, currently a successful community and entertainment centre. Now in its 8th year of operation, it is used for weddings, wakes, parties, local community events, including Bishop Stainton Players, various fairs, including the Christmas Fair. There are also summer activities at weekends for the benefit of the community of Bishop Stainton and the surrounding area. Red Rock Brewery has now moved off-site, and the building that it occupied is empty and unused. The business at Humber Barn has expanded, and there are hopes to use the old brewery for wedding and funeral ceremonies. This would allow the adjoining old workshop to continue its current use as a hospitality area. The wedding business has increased over recent years and is currently running to 52 weddings a year. The addition of a designated chapel area would enable considerably improved site efficiency, the statement says, and allow those attending to move freely between the areas without interruption to proceedings and comfort of the guests. The change of use would improve on-site safety with the removal of brewery drays and commercial vehicles visiting the site. Commercial loading and delivery of brewing materials also. The access road has already been upgraded and hard surfaced. The total site currently employs one full-time staff member and 7 part-time, and expanding the business would create additional jobs. There is already on-site parking for 50 vehicles, with additional unlimited parking in the adjacent field when large functions are taking place. Teignbridge Council planners will make a decision at a future date.
No one is listening to us, claim Queen Street traders. Traders who say their businesses will be destroyed by planned changes to parking and traffic flows in the centre of Newton Abbot say no one is listening to them. The leader of Teignbridge Council says he wants to go on talking to them, even though the official consultation is over. But they claim they are still not being properly asked what they think. Work on the scheme is due to start in the spring, and supporters say widening pavements and changing traffic flows in Queen Street will make the town centre cleaner and safer, creating a better environment for shoppers. The plans dominated a meeting of Teignbridge's full council, with a long list of questions from members of the public and a heated debate later on whether to press on. Councillor Mike Ryan, South Devon Alliance, Buckland and Milber, told the meeting, "I know what Newton Abbot is like. I've lived here all my life and I don't want to see it ruined." A question from trader Ali Locker asked, "Why are you not listening to the local traders and residents?" Council leader Martin Wrigley, Lib Dem Dawlish North East, said, "While the consultation had ended, he still wanted to discuss the issues that could be fixed." "The whole scheme is a travesty," said Town Centre resident Jill Anderson, while Hazel Trithewey added, "It's beyond belief." Claire Quilvenock of Jackson's Fishmongers and Chip Shop asked how businesses would be compensated for the losses they would suffer. She told councillors, "You have lost the confidence of this town. This street will end up being closed down. Why on earth are you not engaging with us to come up with a plan that will enhance our town rather than kill it?" Carmen Haniff, who is development manager for the Federation of Small Businesses in Devon, said the organisation is extremely concerned, given that no similar schemes elsewhere in Devon had been successful. "Businesses know their customers better than anybody else," she said. "This is going to have a terrible impact." Councillor Wrigley said pausing the scheme for more consultation was not an option. He added, "The reality is that this scheme has come out of a long consultation with the town. It is broadly wanted by residents, although I can see it is difficult for the traders on the street. There is a desire for this. It is still wanted. Trade will increase and shops will prosper. It will be beneficial. The scheme is not destroying Queen Street. It is enhancing it." Councillor Wrigley said town centre retail is changing and high streets have to adapt. But Councillor Liam Malone, South Devon Alliance College, said the plan was an act of civic violence. Later in the meeting, members decided by 18 votes to 9 with 7 abstentions to reaffirm the council's support for the Queen Street Pedestrian Enhancement Scheme.
Newton's Body Shop store to close. Newton Abbott's Body Shop branch is to shut, it has been confirmed. Administrators have announced a list of wide-scale store closures since being appointed by the company's owners. 7 stores, mostly in London, closed with immediate effect. Now almost half of the UK's 198 stores will shut, and the number of staff in its head office is expected to be reduced by about 40%, down to 400 full-time employees. The business announced it entered administration last week, but said it will continue to trade both in-store and online while plans are made for the future of the High Street brand. No date has yet been given for the Newton Abbott store's closure, but it has been reported that High Street giant Next has approached administrators, FRP Advisory. The company is considering a rescue bid for parts of the Body Shop business. It is the latest blow for the Teignbridge Council-owned shopping centre. Wilko closed last year, leaving a substantial unit standing empty, and there are a number of smaller units which are also vacant. Game, the national video game retailer, has also announced it is to close and will shut its doors in 2 weeks. And there is a photograph here of the green and white frontage of the Body Shop at Newton Abbott with its very distinctive Body Shop logo.
We have 2 obituaries today. Derek Jack King died on February the 16th, 2024, aged 79 years, beloved husband of Mary. Funeral Friday the 8th of March at St. George's Holcombe at 2 p.m. Family flowers only. Donations, if desired, for water aid by collection plate or to Dawlish Funeral Care, Scala House, Lawn Terrace, Dawlish, EX79PY. And the second obituary is Mary Allison, passed away peacefully at Coombswood House, Kingstainton, formerly of Linden Terrace, Newton Abbott, on February the 17th, 2024, aged 90. Sister to Rosemary, loving mum to Claire, Morag and Penelope, mother-in-law to Simon and Alistair, much-loved gran to Thomas, Christina, Dominic and Charlotte, and great-gran to William, Ellie May, Reuben and Zara Lena. The service will be at Torquay Crematorium at 2:30 p.m. on Friday the 15th of March 2024. Please wear a splash of colour. Family flowers only, but if desired, donations to Devon Air Ambulance, care of Co-op Funeral Care, 48 Teen Street, Tynmouth.
Here is a report on Tynmouth Tangent by Pam Stanaway. The Committee of Tynmouth Tangent, led by our enthusiastic and fundraising officer Jerry Wilcox, has just held a hugely successful evening at Holcombe Village Hall. It was a splendid night to cheer up the February blues, with a pig racing evening with toy furry piggies, which was a first for the club. It was the most brilliant fun evening, with lots of hurrahs and shouts of sausages among the country folk filling the hall. Entertainer the amazing Adrian Bing made the evening and encouraged people to place bets to raise money for Chairman Sam Honeywood's charity this year. The total raise was £1,068 for Tynmouth Food Larder, run by Jackie Jackson with her husband Roger. Jackie explained how grateful she was for Tangent's efforts and the people who desperately rely on the food contributions in Tynmouth and the surrounding areas. The Wee Shoppy in Tynmouth provided the food, a tasty selection of pastry savouries. Special thanks to Piggy sponsors Yellen's Bakery, Tozer's Solicitors, Peter Gorman Decorator and Cofton Holiday Camp. Ever ready for the next event, Tangent has tickets printed for a fashion show, which is on Thursday the 9th of May, with new seasons, new trends from number 17 in Dawlish, which will be held at the Langston Cliff Hotel. And there is a photograph accompanying this, with all the members thoroughly enjoying the thrills and spills of piggy racing.
And now we have a report from the Dawlish Garden Society by June Cassidy. Chair June Cassidy introduced 11 new members to the group who joined at the January coffee, social, small plant sale and seed swap. There were 12 entries in the Flower of the Month competition, and not surprisingly, hellebores were the stars of the show. The talk by one of our favourite speakers, Roger Avery, was entertaining and informative. After a fascinating career in zoology at Bristol University, Roger is still keeping busy giving talks on subjects that gardeners will be interested in. He has previously talked about worms and insects, so we were looking forward to how he would interpret alien invaders to inform and entertain us. The next meeting of Dawlish Garden Society reverts to Thursday evening on the 28th of March with our AGM and Spring Flower Show at the Manor Dawlish at 6:45 to set up your entries. The entry form and more information is on our website, dawlishgardensociety.uk. Visitors are always made welcome with raffle entry and refreshments for £3, or to join for the whole year for only £10. And there is a photograph of Dawlish Garden Society Judge Roger Avery looking at the flowers of the month, aided by one of their committee members, Sally Gidney, and it's very attractive. There are some clear glass bottles, most of which seem to have daffodils in them.
Trees to be planted with help of new funding. More than 10,000 trees are being planted this winter through the first season of Devon County Council's newly awarded Local Authority Treescape Fund. The community planting scheme is being rolled out this winter with the help of local not-for-profit social enterprise Parklife Southwest. The initiative is being carried out alongside the planting of 2,250 trees this season by landowners and communities who successfully applied to the Free Tree Scheme. It is the third and final year that Devon County Council, DCC, has received support for the scheme through the Emergency Tree Fund granted by the Woodland Trust. Since DCC first piloted the Free Tree Scheme in 2019 and combining all of the Council's tree planting initiatives, the authority has planted just over 48,200 trees in total as part of its ongoing efforts to meet its carbon net zero targets by 2030. Councillor Andrea Davis, Cabinet Member for Climate Change and Environment, said, "With the help of our first award of Local Authority Treescapes funding, and the third year we've had the support from the Woodland Trust Emergency Tree Fund, we're planting thousands more trees this winter, which will make a really positive difference for our country. Our community planting schemes are encouraging landowners and communities across Devon to plant native broadleaf trees, which support wildlife, improves our local landscapes, and helps to reduce carbon emissions."
Devon gig for Funny Man Lee. Comedian Lee Hurst is back on the road in his first national stand-up comedy tour in 6 years and will be appearing at a Devon venue later this month. On March the 22nd, he'll be bringing Sweet Sorted Lovely, the tour, to the stage of the Babbicombe Theatre for a 7:30 p.m. show. Lee guarantees what he does best, provide a night of big laughs. With over 30 years' experience of stand-up, you can be confident in his ability to have you laughing out loud throughout the show. He'll be bringing you up to date with what's going on in his life, as well as his observations on things. Mostly, he'll be taking a positive spin and arguing for people to always take the mickey to make the world a more fun place to be in. Tickets for the gig can be booked with the venue at www.babbicombetheatre.com or the box office on 01803 328 385.
Look no further for your joie de vivre. The Atea Quintet, a wind quintet, will be performing in their inimitable style at Newton Abbott's Courtney Centre on March the 15th. This talented award-winning group will play a variety of quintets and a quartet and will also introduce the audience to the Cor Anglais. Now celebrating 15 years and loving ensemble performance, the Atea Quintet is the foremost British wind ensemble of its generation. The five performers are hugely experienced, both as soloists and orchestral leads. Their well-crafted concert promises to delight, enlighten, and entertain with its joy, humour, introspection, and depth. Promoted by NADSA Concerts, the 7:30 p.m. performance on March the 15th is sponsored by Byright Tyres, Brunel Road, Newton Abbott, TQ12 4PB. All tickets must be booked in advance through the website www.nadsa.co.uk. And there is a very nice photograph of the five members of the quintet, five young gentlemen, and all are displaying the various instruments that they play.
Millions needed to repair buildings at Torbay and South Devon Trust. Tens of millions of pounds is needed to restore crumbling buildings to full working order at the Torbay and South Devon Trust's new figures show. Across England, a growing number of buildings are in a poor state, with the repair bill climbing to £11.6 billion last year. NHS Providers, the body which represents NHS Hospital, Mental Health, Community and Ambulance Service, said the rate at which the bill is rising is alarming and urged the government to provide much-needed investment in broken buildings. The latest NHS digital figures show 58.6 million is needed to restore buildings at Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust to certain standards as of March. The work should have already taken place and covers everything from leaky gutters and faulty lifts to critical electrical and structural issues in hospital buildings. It does not include planned maintenance due to be undertaken. Of this, just 4.7 million is required to fix high-risk issues, which NHS reports say must be addressed with urgent priority to prevent catastrophic failure, major disruption to clinical services, or safety deficiencies liable to cause serious injury. The most expensive site was Torbay District General Hospital, with 50.9 million needed to complete all the necessary repairs. Nationally, the maintenance backlog rose by more than 13% last year, including 2.4 billion earmarked to eradicate the high-risk backlog. Chief Executive of NHS Providers, Sir Julian Hartley, said, "The cost of trying to patch up creaking buildings and outdated facilities is rocketing. Far too many NHS buildings and equipment are in a very bad way, and the situation is just getting worse. The safety of patients and staff is at stake. To provide first-class care, the NHS needs safe, efficient and reliable buildings, facilities and equipment." In October, the Department for Health and Social Care confirmed 42 sites have reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete, RAC, and must be repaired, but none of these were at Torbay and South Devon Trust. Sir Julian said, "The presence of the collapse risk concrete is a symptom of a far bigger and long-running problem. Many trusts, mental health, community, hospital and ambulance services need major investment to refurbish ageing buildings and tackle risks to the safety of patients and staff," he added. "We need the government to shift gear and inject a significant shot in the arm of capital investment in the NHS." A DHSC spokesman said, "We have invested significant sums to upgrade and modernise NHS buildings so staff have the facilities needed to provide world-class care for patients, including 4.2 billion this financial year. Trusts are responsible for prioritising this funding to maintain and refurbish their premises, including the renewal and replacement of equipment. This on top of the 3.7 billion made available for the first 4 years of the new hospital programme, and a further 1.7 billion for over 70 hospital upgrades across England, alongside a range of nationally funded infrastructure improvements in mental health, urgent and emergency care, and diagnostic capacity." And there is a photograph with this article of Torbay Hospital with all the ambulances lined up outside.
Devolution deal declared dangerous. A devolution deal giving more powers to Torbay and Devon is a nasty and dangerous move by a nasty and dangerous government, it has been claimed. Members of Teignbridge Council raised a chorus of concerns about the deal, which will see Devon County Council and Torbay Council working together as a combined county authority, or a CCA. Public consultation has just begun, and the government says the deal will benefit the whole county by giving it more say in how money is distributed and spent on things such as transport, strategy, housing and adult education. But critics fear district councils will lose out as Devon and Torbay Unitary Authority take control. The relationship was also described at a recent county council meeting as the Torbay tail wagging the Devon dog. A Teignbridge full council meeting heard that the cabinet running the new CCA would have 3 members from Devon, 3 from Torbay and two to represent the county's eight district council. There will also be representatives from the business and education sectors, as well as the police and crime commissioner. Councillor John Farrand-Rogers, Liberal Democrat for Moreton Hampstead, said the deal is nasty and dangerous. He said, Torbay is the same size as we are and they have their own priorities. They shouldn't be deciding for us what our priorities are. And Teignbridge Council leader Martin Wrigley, Lib Dem for Dawlish North East, said he is concerned that devolution would weaken the council's position when dealing with Homes England, a public body that helps fund affordable housing. In future, the agency would deal directly with the CCA. He added, we would like to continue the relationship directly with them so that we are not competing with other districts in Devon for the funding to build council homes. We do not need to be competing with Torbay to build affordable housing. I don't want us to be competing with Torbay. I want us to be competing on a national level. And, he said, the way the CCA would be overseen, with just two cabinet seats for district councils, was horribly wrong. He continued, I see little advantage to us. I see quite a lot of disadvantage. Councillor Phil Bullivant, Conservative for Bradley, said the devolution would bring decision-making closer to the people and would benefit everyone in Teignbridge. But Councillor Richard Dawes, South Devon Alliance, Ambrook, disagreed. He said, this will reduce the relevance of Teignbridge to the level of a town council. I think it is wrong, and we need to resist this with every fibre of our being.
Mannequin Max to help rescuers. Max, the equine mannequin, is helping the emergency services to deal with horse rescues. The life-size model horse was bought by Teignbridge-based charity the Mare and Foal Sanctuary, with £200,000 raised through its first crowdfunder. The overwhelming response to the fundraising campaign allowed the charity to buy the vital training equipment in the shape of Max. The articulated equine mannequin is designed to help train emergency teams to rescue horses and ponies from trenches, ditches, cliffs, from water and mud entrapment. Max has been engineered by specialist UK company Resquip and is designed to be as lifelike as possible with realistic joint articulation and muscle definition. Rescuers rarely get the chance to practice realistic lifestyle rescue scenarios, so the Mare and Foal Sanctuary hopes to offer professional extraction teams the opportunity to learn best practice alongside them in the future. Generous supporters contributed to the crowdfunder campaign launched in the autumn, and it raised £9,289 of the charity's £8,800 target. Then the crowdfunder prompted a massive donation of £170,000 by Leslie William in memory of her friend Jeff Ward. In appreciation for their kindness, the charity asked Leslie to name the new mannequin. Leslie said, I wanted to help with the purchase because this was something that would have a direct impact on the welfare of horses in the southwest, and Jeff cared so much about that. I knew straight away that it would be called Max after Jeff's late dog. Sadly, Jeff's partner Patricia passed away 8 years before Max's arrival. Max was also by Jeff's side, providing comfort, companionship, and unconditional love until he passed away. So, in Max's memory, I see the mannequin horse as a quiet, unassuming companion who is always there, ever ready to train people to rescue equines in a number of scenarios. I'm proud that Jeff's donation will make such a huge difference to the lives of horses, ponies, and the people who care about them. Sarah Bowden of the Mare and Foal Sanctuary's head of equine welfare said, too often we witness terrible cases of horses and ponies becoming trapped in tight spaces or stuck fast in rivers or bogs. A horse can weigh anything up to 600 kilograms, which is more than 90 stone, so such rescues are highly dangerous and can result in the death of the equine and injury to rescue team members. Specialist training exercises using Max in our new horse mannequin will help us to build emergency response partnerships and develop more effective extraction techniques. And there's a lovely photograph here of Max in all his glory. He is brown with a white blaze down his nose and two white socks on his forelegs. And he appears to be standing on what looks like a rather large scooter, but I think it's a means of getting him from A to B. And he's flanked on either side by two ponies, Wave, who is pure white, and Calvados, who is, not surprisingly, a brown colour with some white feet. And they're looking possibly a little bit suspiciously at their new stable chum.
Several ostriches legally owned in Tinbridge. The council has permitted several ostriches to be privately owned in Tinbridge New Figures Show. Wildlife charity, the Born Free Foundation, said improved regulation is needed after its research found thousands of wild animals are owned privately across Great Britain. Figures obtained by the charity from Freedom of Information requests sent to councils reveal there is a dangerous wild animal license allowing six ostriches to be kept privately in Tinbridge. Chris Lewis, Born Free's captivity research officer, said, "The Dangerous Wild Animals Act was intended to make the keeping of such animals, categorised as dangerous, a wholly exceptional circumstance. However, Born Free's ongoing research paints a very different picture." He added, "Regulations on keeping and trading of wild animals kept as pets are in urgent need of review." Across Great Britain, the charity found over 2,700 dangerous wild animals were licensed to be owned privately. They include more than 200 wildcats and 250 primates. It estimates there are also 400 venomous snakes kept in British homes, more than 10 times the number in zoos. The southwest was home to several wildcats, including lynxes and leopards. Analysis shows the number of reported venomous snakes in the region has almost doubled from 25 in 2020 to 44 last year. Mr. Lewis added, "Regulations on the keeping and trading of wild animals kept as pets are in urgent need of review." Dr. Mark Jones, the charity's head of policy, said, "It is unbelievable that, in this day and age, so many dangerous animals, including big cats, large primates, crocodiles, and venomous snakes, continue to be kept legally in people's homes in the UK. Increasing demand for and trade in all kinds of wild animals as exotic pets puts owners and the wider public at risk of injury or disease. It also results in serious animal suffering, and the demand increases the pressure on many wild populations, which are often already under threat. A Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs spokesman said, "Anyone wishing to keep an animal under the Dangerous Wild Animals Act must be vetted and apply for a licence, which sets out conditions on caring for the animal." They added, "We keep this legislation under regular review to ensure it remains effective in keeping the public safe." They said the government increased the maximum prison sentence for animal cruelty to 5 years in 2021 and added, "It is currently bringing forward legislation to prohibit primates being kept as domestic pets." And there is a lovely photograph here of an ostrich, its head with its mouth wide open, looking extremely startled. It's quite a comical photograph.
Volunteers help with city blitz bomb evacuation. Emergency workers from Tinbridge were drafted in to help deal with last week's unexploded wartime bomb drama in Plymouth. Firefighters from Buckfastleigh, a Coast Guard team from Dawlish, and Ashburton's Dartmoor Search and Rescue team responded to the incident in the Keyham area of the city last Tuesday. After the discovery of a 500-kilogram German bomb led to the evacuation of up to 10,000 people from their homes for over 4 days. Buckfast's firefighters, along with their colleagues from Totnes, were called out on Tuesday to crew the incident command vehicle. Over the 4 days it took to remove the Second World War bomb and detonate it at sea, the fire crews were in attendance at the scene for 60 hours, while alternating the running of the fire service incident command vehicle, firstly at the original 200 metres cordon, and then at the forward control point at Camelhead Fire Station. A Buckfastley Fire Station spokesman said, "Our role was to control resources and record all decisions and messages being sent from the incident on the ground. We returned back to our home station on Friday. We then mobilised back to the incident ground to stand by for precautionary actions whilst the military transported the bomb by road to the dock to take the device out to sea for a controlled detonation. The last few days have been very interesting and provided scenes that won't be forgotten for a very long time. Watching the military, both Army and Navy, work has been amazing, and their level of expertise is both amazing and something we should be proud of as a country. But the most impressive and humbling memory we will take away is the way 10,500 people were evacuated. The speed of the operation and the attitude of the residents was simply breathtaking and restores your faith in community spirit. Thank you to all the volunteers and services that have been involved over the last 4 days, and well done to all." Ashburton Rescue Group described the incident as not one of our normal call-outs. The volunteers work with other agencies in helping to evacuate 10,000 people from the Kiem area as preparations were made to remove the bomb from the garden where it was found. The rescue volunteers met for initial briefings before supporting the cordon evacuation, as colleagues from Dartmoor Search and Rescue also supported the police. In total, more than 70 team members were involved. By the end of Thursday, bomb disposal experts had concluded the best course of action would be to remove the device from the ground, move it to a slipway, and then onto a boat for controlled detonation at sea. The land transfer required the cordon to be moved 100 metres further out. Search and rescue group members with other voluntary and full-time emergency services were asked to assist with further evacuations on Friday. On Friday, teams met at Home Park football ground to help with the final phases of evacuation in preparation for the transport of the unexploded bomb to the Torpoint Ferry slipway at Devonport. A spokesman from Dartmoor Search and Rescue, Ashburton, said, "All in all, an extraordinary incident to be involved in, a massive multi-agency event with a great outcome." More than 60 Coast Guard volunteers, including a team from Dawlish, were also involved, working over 2 days to ensure the safety of the public, knocking on doors, assisting with police cordons, and keeping areas within the danger zones clear. A spokesman for HM Coast Guard said, "Those involved were a credit to the teams and themselves, and we would like to extend our gratitude for their selflessness, professionalism and stamina over the 2 days." And there are a lot of photographs attached to this article. There's one of the Plymouth Argyle Home Park Stadium, where all the volunteers are being briefed. There's another one of the bomb being towed out to be detonated in Plymouth Sound. And there's quite a few of all the areas in Kiem with the empty houses and the areas being patrolled to make sure everything's safe there. And also the control room where they were directing what everybody should do. And also a photograph of the Buckfastley firefighters.
And now some good news from our local runners, the Dawlish Coasters. Katie Holman took part in the Dartmoor Winter Traverse Race, a difficult 30k course. Starting out in Princetown, it headed out across the open moorland, taking in many tours, including Roostor, Tavy Cleeve, Hare's Tor, and Chat Tor. From there, picking up the Rattlebrook Dismantled Railway, it headed down to the finish in Meldon. It was a race of all weathers, starting out with snow, then sunshine, heavy rain, wind, hailstorms, before more sunshine for the finish. Katie completed it in 5 hours, 28 minutes. Eric Foster completed the Loo 10-miler in wet and windy conditions and came third. A couple of Dawlish coasters travelled to London for the Cancer Research London Winter Run 10K. In his first race for 6 months following injury, Andy McMillan was extremely pleased to complete the closed roads course around central London in exactly 43 minutes. Meanwhile, Karen McMillan was equally delighted to have recorded a course personal best in 1 hour 23.57, but most importantly, over £750,000 was raised for a cause that affects us all.
Now, a few dates to your diary before we finish. On Tuesday, the 5th of March, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Exmouth. Please phone 01626 888890 to book. That's 01626 888890. On Saturday the 9th of March, St Paul's Church Darkos have their monthly sale from 11 till 2. On Sunday the 10th of March, the Mothering Sunday service at St George's Church Holcombe is at 9:30 a.m. On Tuesday the 12th of March, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Trego Mills. Phone the same phone number as I said earlier to book. And on Saturday the 16th of March, Cancer Research Spring Sale is being held at the Methodist Hall in Dawlish. That brings us to the end of this week's edition of Here and Now, recorded in our studios in Dawlish on Friday the 1st of March. We hope that you have enjoyed the programme. If you need to contact us for any reason, the telephone number is 07376 147374. I'll repeat that. That's 07376 147374. Please leave your name and telephone number on the answering service and we will ring you back. Our editor this week is Jean Cole. The copier is Sue Smallwood and the dispatcher is Sue Smallwood. The programme was produced and directed by Ian Ferguson. So it's time for us to say goodbye from our readers, Lynn Yates and Maggie West.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And from me, Jean Cole, goodbye.